This program does not create an attorney-client relationship between Moss and Barnett, a professional association, or any attorney appearing on this program and any caller or listener. Please remember that we can only give general information, and every case is unique. Always check with your individual attorney for any specific legal concerns. If you are in need of specific legal advice or are looking for an attorney, please do not hesitate to give Moss and Barnett a call at 612-877-5000.
This is WCCO's Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett.
We are live at the fair. Steve Thompson along with Susan Rode and Tom Schroer. Good to see you both. Hard to believe we're back at another state fair, Tom.
Steve, it's been four in a row and loving him.
Yeah, and a cool day. I'm glad we weren't out here on Friday. It was a little warm.
You know, I dressed up like I was headed for the rainforest, but it looks pretty good out there, and it feels great to be here.
No doubt. And Susan Rode is joining us as well. Susan, great to see you.
Good to see you. Good to be back.
And I understand you've been on the fairgrounds for several hours already.
Yes, I had the privilege of starting the day here with a two-year-old at about a quarter to eight this morning. So I can tell you about all the animal barns.
Very good. And a very special guest on the program today.
Very special guest. We have with us today the Chief Justice of the Minnesota Supreme Court, Justice Lori Gilday. And so, Justice, welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here at the fair.
Good. Well, we're pleased to have you. We have tons of questions for you.
Right. Our listeners will be interested to be reminded again, because this is Chief Justice Gilday's second visit to our show, that she had a long and distinguished career, first as a private practice lawyer, then worked for many years as an attorney with the University of Minnesota. After that was a government prosecutor and a state trial court judge before being elevated about 6.5 years ago to the Minnesota Supreme Court, an institution that she has led as our state's chief justice for the last 2.5 years. So one of the most powerful and important jobs in state government, and we are so very, very honored to have you with us today again.
Thank you, Tom. It's great to be here.
So, Justice, you are like the boss of everything in terms of our world and in terms of what we do as lawyers. She kind of is the boss of all of it, which is wonderful because she's a good boss. But you also have a very special connection today at the fair, and I wanted to cover that before we got into the serious stuff. Today at the fair is 4-H Day, and I understand you have quite a reputation in 4-H circles.
Well, I was an active participant in 4-H as a kid and as a teenager. I grew up in a really small town in northwestern Minnesota, and 4-H was a big part of our life. My sister and I were very actively involved, and I remember my first Grand Champion Purple Ribbon was showing my Shetland Pony Carmel in the halter class, and I was 9 years old, and I was very excited about it. And then later in my teenage years, I did have a chance to come here to the state fair and take a couple of projects here to the fair, and that was a really exciting thing for a girl from Plummer, Minnesota to be able to do. So I'm really honored to be here on 4-H Day.
And we're glad to have you. And it was amazing to go around and see all of the barns and all of those really dedicated kids working so hard.
Yeah, I'd love to see the girls especially doing things with their dairy cows and their goats and their chickens. It's great. I love it.
It is. Well, speaking of being boss of everything, let's get to what you do a little bit. I know that the most important thing you do, or one of the most important things, obviously, is to decide cases at the Supreme Court level. And you're heading that up. I can tell people you sit in the middle of the bench when everyone's sitting there lined up. It's quite an imposing sight. But I must say that the Supreme Court is somewhat selective in what it hears and what it does. And maybe you could tell everyone for just a few minutes how you decide what you're going to hear and why it is not everyone can appear before you.
Yes, we get about 700 cases every year that people ask us to review. So we have three levels of court in Minnesota. We have the trial court, which is where the witnesses come and where the juries are, where the facts are found. And then we have the middle court, which is the Court of Appeals, and you have an automatic right to take your case from the trial court to the Court of Appeals if you are unhappy with what happened at the trial court. But our court, the top court in the state, we're largely a court of discretionary review, which means that most of the cases that we decide are ones that we choose to decide. And so we get about 700 cases that come to us from the Court of Appeals. And we consider those cases and we look at what they're about and we research the area of law and the arguments that the parties are making. And what we really think about is, does this case present an issue of statewide importance? Is this an issue where the law in play is going to affect people in Red Lake County, where I grew up, in McLeod County, where you grew up, in Hennepin County, in Ramsey County? Is it an issue of statewide importance? And that really drives our decision making. And you can think of some things that would be obviously issues of statewide importance. Is there a provision in the Minnesota Constitution that's at issue in the case? The Constitution affects everybody, whether it's the state constitution or the United States Constitution. So those are some of the things that we think about when we decide which cases we're going to decide. And there are seven justices on the court. It takes three of us to vote yes to hear your case. And so that's how we go about doing that.
Chief Justice, let me ask, are there not, though, some cases that are appealable as a matter of constitutional right to the Minnesota Supreme Court?
There are some cases that come to us automatically. And by state statute in Minnesota, first-degree murder is one example. And so if there has been a defendant who has gone through a trial and the trial court's been convicted of first-degree murder and is going to spend the rest of his or her life in prison, the appeal of that case comes automatically to the Supreme Court. There are other things that fall within our original jurisdiction, which means the case starts with us. Lawyer discipline cases are an example of that. So there are some cases that we have to take, in effect, but the vast majority are discretionary review with us.
Back in the day when the Minnesota Court of Appeals was first being instituted, and as I recall, it was instituted by constitutional amendments.
Yes.
There was a concern that the Minnesota Supreme Court wouldn't any longer have enough to do after we added another layer of judicial appellate court decision making. What's your take on that?
We have enough to do.
Yeah, you get all kinds of criminal cases, workers' comp cases, tax court cases,
yes.
As you say, lawyer disciplinary cases.
It's a wide variety of cases, and that's important. It's important to recognize that judges who serve on the appellate courts in Minnesota really have to be generalists. You have to become an expert in the area of law at issue in that case, whether it's a family law case or a contract case or a criminal case, whatever it is. You need to really be willing to do the work necessary to become an expert in that area of law that's at issue in that case. You owe it to the people involved in the case, certainly, but to the people of Minnesota.
When you get a criminal case, in particular, let's say a first-degree homicide conviction that you're appealing, I imagine that brings with it a tremendous sense of responsibility, not only to the party who's been convicted, but also to society to apply the law. And what kind of effort do you make to get inside the actual evidence and the case below to really make sure that the conviction is supportable?
Well, in that kind of circumstance, the court, of course, is not finding the facts. The jury is sitting there and determining what happened and which witnesses to believe. But we do give an exhaustive review of those cases because it's our statutory obligation and it's our duty to the people of Minnesota to make sure that the right result happened in that case.
We have more on the way live from the fair. Chief Justice of the State Supreme Court, Lori Gilday, is here. Susan Rowe, Tom Schroyer. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. And it will continue in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO.
This is Sidebar on Minnesota Law.
You can't handle the truth.
Excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths.
Are you sure this is legal?
You think you know every trick in the book, and they come up with another one.
Here comes a judge. Did you know there are presently 19 federal judges assigned in Minnesota and 62 state court judges in Hennepin County?
Minnesota Law is presented by Moss and Barnett and returns in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO.
From the Minnesota State Fair Buick Studios, this is News Radio 830 WCCO.
It is Minnesota Law presented by Moss and Barnett. And for more, go online, Moss and Barnett on WCCO.com. Susan Rode, Tom Schroyer, our host today, live from the fair, and our very special guest is the Chief Justice of the State Supreme Court, Lori Gilday. And I wanted to follow up. You were talking about cases you hear. Typically, an opinion is written for the majority, kind of like the federal Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court. How often do you write those opinions, and how is that decided?
Well, we randomly assign our cases. So about a month before the case is argued, the case is assigned to a chambers, and then the judge who sits in that chambers is the presumptive author of the opinion for the court, assuming that that justice gets a majority. And if that justice doesn't get a majority, which on our court is 4 votes, then I, as Chief Justice, would assign the case to someone else to write.
Is it out of bounds once an opinion is published for the justices to comment independently?
Well, we say that the opinion is the word of the court, and the opinion speaks for itself. And we set precedent for the state. And so the precedent is what's in the opinion, what's written in the opinion. And so for one of us to go off and talk about that, I mean, it happens. And it's fine, but we need to understand, just like when judges charge juries, the judge will say to the jury, if anything I have said during my remarks or my instructions to you varies from your recollection of the evidence, you should rely on your recollection of the evidence. Similarly, if I were to talk about a case that the court decided, I would give that same kind of caution, that the opinion of the court speaks for itself, and if anything I say today in characterizing that opinion is at variance with the written word of the court, please rely on the written word of the court.
All right, so I won't bring up individual cases going
you,
forward
Steve.
For the remainder of the hour. I just wanted to clarify
you,
that right out of the break.
I do want to say something about... Thank you, Steve.
Yeah.
It seems to me, as someone who reads your opinions every week, that there are very few actually dissenting opinions, especially as compared with the U.S. Supreme Court. What would you attribute that to?
Well, we are unanimous much more than we're not, and I think the same is true for we call them the big Supremes, the United States Supreme Court. Of course, the cases where the United States Supreme Court is deeply divided are the ones that the media covers, and so the public is left with the impression that they're a deeply divided court. And, you know, they may be on issues that where the populace is deeply divided, but they're unanimous more than they're not, and we and the Minnesota Supreme Court are unanimous much more than we're not.
You know, speaking of unanimity, you have a new member joining
yes.
the Supreme Court, and that was in the newspaper this week. We know that Justice Meyer has retired, and Justice Wright has joined your court. Can you say just a few words about her?
Yes, we're very excited to have Judge Wright come on to the court. It was really, it was a historic appointment, the first African-American woman to serve on our court. And it's so important that the court is reflective of society, and we should look like the people that we work for. And so we're just grateful, so grateful to Governor Dayton for the care and diligence with which he is exercising his responsibility to appoint judges to vacant positions, including Justice Designee Wright.
You know, could we take a moment? Now, she was appointed.
Yes.
And then if I look around, there's a lot of judges that are running for re-election or election. How do you get to be a judge? Does it always have to start with an appointment, or how does that process work?
Well, judges are elected in Minnesota. That's in our Constitution, and it's always been that way, that we are elected officials in the state of Minnesota. But we're elected for 6-year terms. But the Constitution also provides that if a judge leaves office during her 6-year term, for whatever reason, take Justice Meyer's case, she retired, then the governor has the obligation in the Constitution to appoint someone to fill that vacancy. And then the person appointed stands for election. And so to get appointed to be a judge, you go through a very rigorous merit selection process. It's the process I went through before I was appointed to be a judge in the trial court. And there's a hiring committee. There's a, and this is all in state statute, and your listeners can Google the Minnesota Judicial Selection Commission, and they can find out about the hiring committee, which is the Judicial Selection Commission. And they receive the applications, they do background checks of all the applicants, and find out what your qualifications are, what kind of decision maker you will be. Are you a good listener? Are you a fair person? So they do that checking and screening, and then they conduct interviews, and they deliberate then as a commission, and they recommend finalists to the governor, and then there's more vetting and background checking that goes on, and the governor conducts interviews and then makes the appointment. And so that's the process that I went through before I became a judge, and that's the process that Judge Wright, Justice Designee Wright, has gone through.
And it is a very daunting process. I mean, ending up in the governor's office being quizzed for what I hear is quite a long time.
Yes.
It's somewhat intimidating, I would imagine.
It's an exhausting process, and it should be, because judges are called on to decide some of the most important matters in people's lives. People come to the courts with their most important issues, issues of freedom and property and family. And so it needs to be a rigorous selection process that applicants have to go through before they're appointed to the bench.
We have more on the way. We're honored to have the Chief Justice of the State Supreme Court, Lori Gilday, and of course Tom Schroyer and Susan Rhode are joining us. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. Quick break for the weather, and we'll come back to the State Fair in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO.
You're listening to News Radio 830 WCCO, broadcasting live from the Minnesota State Fair.
And we are live at the Minnesota State Fair. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. Tom Schroyer, Susan Rhode, and our very special guest is State Supreme Court Chief Justice Lori Gilday. And once again, for more on today's program, feel free to go online, Moss and Barnett on WCCO.com, and all our other programs as well, including podcasts. Tom, Susan?
Well, you know, Justice Gilday, we know you decide cases, and that's a very big part of your job, but you do a lot of other things. I see you around a lot during the week, and you wear a lot of other hats. And can you talk just a little bit for us about some of the other jobs you have?
Yes. So I participate with the court just as all the other justices do, and my colleagues routinely, regularly remind me that my vote doesn't count any more than theirs. And I'm one of seven for purposes of the work of the court, choosing which cases to decide, and then deciding the cases, writing the opinions. But as Chief Justice, I'm the administrative head of the judicial branch of government. And the branch of government has approximately 2,500 employees. We operate in 100 locations, and our budget is approximately $275 million a year. And so as the administrative head of the branch of government, I oversee all of that, and I have a lot of great staff support that help. We have our governing body is called the Minnesota Judicial Council. It's a 25-member body, and that body sets the policy for the branch, makes budget decisions, and they're a big help in terms of the administration of the branch of government.
You know, speaking of that, last time you were with us, we had a long talk about budget crisis.
Yes.
And what was facing the courts. What's happened since then?
Well, one of the jobs of the Chief Justice really is to be the lobbyist in chief for the justice system. And when I became Chief Justice, we were feeling the effects of three straight years of budget cuts. The judicial branch is almost all, our budget is spent on almost all people. Somewhere north of 85% of our budget is people. So when our budget gets cut, we lose people. When we have fewer people, it takes us longer to get our work done. And so what we were seeing were delays and backlogs building all around our state. In some places, it was taking 18 months to get a criminal case tried. You know, because you practice family law, it was taking us too long to get divorces resolved. Small claims cases were taking 6 to 8 months. And perhaps worst of all, we were feeling during those years of budget cuts, we saw the Court of Appeals reverse criminal convictions for three felons. These are violent felonies. They'd gone through trials. A jury of their peers had found them guilty. But up on appeal, they said, you know what, it took too long to get my case through the system. And you have a constitutional right to a speedy trial. And so in each of those three cases, the Court of Appeals reversed those convictions because it took us too long. Well, we had to stop the bleeding there. That's not what the people of Minnesota deserve. And so for the safety and security of all of our communities, we went over to the legislature with a broad coalition of supporters, law enforcement, police, sheriffs, prosecutors, defense lawyers, organized labor, and the organized bar. And we went over there together and we said, you can't cut the judiciary anymore. And we understood the significant budget shortfall facing our state. I mean, it was record, historic deficits. And we said, we're not over here asking you for new money. We're not seeking to get any of that money that was cut restored. Just don't cut us anymore. Hold us harmless. And as a result of that coalition of support, we were successful. When the dust finally settled on the special session, the legislature and the governor agreed to fully fund our budget request. And that was some have called that a significant, historic accomplishment. I call it common sense. It's really an example of good Minnesota common sense.
Common sense, but it took a lot of work to prevail on that common sense issue.
Well, it's a big part of my job, and I enjoy it very much. I mean, as a lawyer, and you both know this, you're advocating for your clients. And when I became a judge, my friend said to me, you're going to miss being a lawyer because you love the courtroom advocacy. And I didn't think that I would miss it, and I didn't realize until I had a chance to go to the legislature and advocate with the governor, and now I was advocating for a cause again, a greater cause, of course, on behalf of all the people of Minnesota, and I enjoy it very much.
It's wonderful.
It was a bit of an eye-opener, I would say, to me, when the criminal prosecutors in the state and the police and the sheriff's department supported your budget lobbying, because, as you say, it was critically important to the fulfillment of their mission of providing public safety to the state. And people don't realize we need to have a judge, and we need to have public defenders, and we need to have the ability to process these cases if we're going to have criminal law enforcement.
Absolutely. I mean, we cannot put the people that we are justifiably afraid of in prison unless we have a fully functioning justice system.
We have more on the way. Good time to take a break. We'll come back. Chief Justice of the State Supreme Court, Lori Gilday, is joining us. Of course, our host today is Susan Rode and Tom Scheuer. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, here on News Radio 830 WCECO.
This is Sidebar on Minnesota Law.
You can't handle the truth.
Excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths.
Are you sure this is legal?
You think you know every trick in the book, and they come up with another one.
Moss and Barnett, excellence in the community. Did you know every year Moss and Barnett awards the Paul Van Valkenburg Award for Distinguished Community Service to one of its employees? Past winners include Tom Keller, Chuck Parsons, Connie Schofield, Adrian Summerfield, Kevin Bush, and Cheryl Riggs.
Minnesota Law is presented by Moss and Barnett and returns in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO.
It's a Minnesota tradition. Live broadcast from the State Fair on News Radio 830 WCCO.
It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, live from the State Fair. It looks like we could get a little rain today. We'll continue to keep you up to date on that. Of course, Tom Scheuer, Susan Rode, our host today, and our very special guest is the Chief Justice of the State Supreme Court, Lori Gilday, and I wanted to follow up a little bit on the budget challenges. And another challenge is making sure that our courts are secure, and I'm sure you work with the counties all over the state, but that is a concern, making sure that people come into court feel secure.
Yes, that's been a concern for us in the judiciary for a long time. We don't own the buildings, and so we partner with the counties in the provision of security, and it really is about the safety of our staff and our judges, but it's about the people who come into our courthouses. They need to feel safe when they come in and get access to justice. And so for us, it becomes an access to justice issue.
Going back to the budget issue a little bit too, you were able to hold the budget, but it came with having to do some pretty hard work in moving the courts forward and making them more efficient, because even to live within the budget you held is not easy to do. And what are some of the things you've been able to do to hold to that budget?
Well, I do think that one of the reasons that we had success in the last legislative budgeting cycle is because we willingly embraced the obligation to prove to our funders, the legislature, and to prove to the people, the taxpayers, that we're good stewards with their money. And so we're in the middle of a very ambitious innovations agenda to try to be more efficient and do what we do better. Perhaps the biggest initiative we've ever undertaken in the judiciary we're embarking on now, and that's the move toward the all-electronic case record. I mean, this is a 24/7 Google, Amazon.com world. People bank online, they shop online, and they should be able to do their court work online. And so we're moving in that direction now. And it will make our staff more efficient, our judges more efficient. I mean, just in just to give an example, in the family law area, which you practice in, Susan, I sat with a court staffer in Winona and watched as she opened up, as she created a new family law case. And all the data that she had to enter, the names of the spouses and the dates of birth and the social security numbers and the children and the addresses and all that. And it took her about a half an hour to create that file. Well, now with electronic filing, you have to create all that information when you make your file your complaint for divorce, as an example. And so now with electronic filing, your computer is going to talk to our computer, and you're going to submit your document electronically, and all of those data fields are going to be automatically populated so that that staffer can instead help the judge in the courtroom or deal with people at the counter. So that move is going to make us, we think, much more efficient. It's going to be easier for judges because the judges can look on the computer screen at the file, and everybody, many people can look at the same file at the same time. And as used to happen to me sometimes when I was a lawyer and I'd come to court, the judge didn't have the physical file. And how frustrating is that? Well, that's not going to happen once we get e-filing up, because the file is going to be right there all the time. And judges all around the state will be able to see it, which of course is very important, that they can have access to information in real time.
Now, Chief Justice, I know that Hennepin County did a pilot project. They're now full-time online with their electronic case dockets. Ramsey County just went there, I believe, within the last 6 months. What's going to be the rollout projected for the whole state?
We're doing pilot projects all around the state. We should, in about a little over a year from now, we should have 11 counties up and running in various forms of e-filing. We've got Clay and Cass and Morrison counties and Hennepin and Ramsey doing various case types in electronic filing now. And of course, the reason you do a pilot is because you want to see what works best and how can we do it better. And so you try it out in different counties. And we're going to continue to evaluate this as it goes on and roll out county by county over a period of time. It will take us a little time. There's always kinks when you roll out a new system. But we're very excited about the upside that it provides for us and for the people we serve.
What about people who don't have access to the internet? Will the courts be making kiosks available for them?
We do already have at all of our courthouse locations computer terminals for those who don't have access to computers in their home. And that's a really big innovation that we're really proud of in the judiciary, because there are a lot of folks who don't have lawyers. They can't afford lawyers, or they choose not to. And so we've created a self-help, a virtual self-help center that people can access either from their home computers or from terminals in the courthouses and get help with the most commonly filed case types. And there are video tutorials that help people understand how to fill out the forms.
And that's really a big task for your court, is to try and make justice accessible to everyone, because a big majority of the people that come before you don't have lawyers.
That's absolutely right. I mean, every Minnesotan has a constitutional right to access to justice, and that is our obligation to ensure that that promise is kept.
But that's challenging, because they don't know the rules, they don't know how to get into court. The education of the general public is something that's really been done well, I think, by the Supreme Court, especially the websites that are available. And
yes, I think that our self-help website is very helpful to the public, just in terms of helping them understand how to do this. And we also have real people at a self-help center that's operated in Hennepin County that you can access all around the state because we provide a telephone right next to the kiosk in the courthouse.
We have more on the way. Quick break, and we'll come back and put a wrap on today's Minnesota Law program. Live from the State Fair, State Supreme Court Chief Justice Lori Gilday is joining us. Tom Scheuer, Susan Rode here as well. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, here on News Radio 830 WCCO.
News Radio 830 WCCO, broadcasting live from the Minnesota State Fair. Also on FM at 102.9 KMNB, HD2, Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Welcome back one more time. We are live from the State Fair on Minnesota Law this week and again next week, and we'll have a preview of that program coming up in a moment. But, of course, we're pleased to be joined by the Chief Justice of the State Supreme Court, Lori Gilday, of course, Susan Rode and Tom Scheuer. Susan?
Yes, Steve. You know, Justice, just to wind up today, my question is, what's the best part of your job? You wear a lot of hats, but what do you really like to get up and do in the morning?
I very much enjoy the outreach part of my job and getting to talk to the people about the work of the court and the work of the Chief Justice. It's a tremendous honor and a privilege to be able to serve the people of my home state in this position. And I also enjoy very much working with my colleagues. We get along so well, and we struggle mightily with some of the most important issues in our state, but we have such respect and admiration for one another, and we don't always agree. And you can see in our writing sometimes that we don't always agree, but we work really hard at disagreeing, but not becoming disagreeable. And it's so critically important. And I think that we can learn a lot from how the court functions. I mean, we meet together, we're open to learning from each other. Just because I didn't agree with you in this case, I need to be open, and I am open to learning from you in the next case. And the way we work together, I think, is really something that's important for the people to understand. You know, Garrison Keillor talks about the university being one of the glories of the state. I would say that the Minnesota Supreme Court is one of the glories of our state.
You know, that's a really such an important message, Chief Justice Gilday, because more and more your court is being called upon to decide issues of the gravest importance here for our state, arbitrating, in effect, umpiring disputes between the governor and the legislature. Doesn't matter which party's in power where, it seems like the disputes come to your court, and of course that's befitting of your court as the co-equal branch of government.
Yes, we are being called on sometimes to do the work when the political branches don't get the work done. And we're mindful of that responsibility, and we work every day to earn the trust and confidence of the people of Minnesota.
All right, well, thank you again. We really appreciate it. On behalf of Moss and Barnett and Minnesota Law here on WCCO, we really appreciate your being with us again, Chief Justice Gilday, and we look forward to having you back to talk more about what the court does and what you're doing to move the court system forward into this new century.
Thank you.
And I want to know, what are you going to do at the fair today?
I'm going to go and see the big pig, and okay. I'm going to get a Rice Krispie bar with chocolate frosting.
Ah. That sounds awesome. That sounds like a great plan here at the fair. Once again, Chief Justice, pleasure to visit with you again on the program.
Thank you, Steve.
And by the way, for more on today's program and all other programs, including podcasts, feel free to go online, Moss and Barnett on WCCO.com. Susan, real quick, are you done with the fair? You've been here since bright and early.
I am well done with the fair for the day.
All right, very good. And Tom, you'll be back 1 week from today.
Yes, we'll be back here exactly in a week, and we'll be with Ed Weiner, one of the nationally recognized family law attorneys here in Minnesota, and of course one of the shareholders at Moss & Barnett, with his musings on the practice of law over the past four decades.
Always entertaining, Ed Weiner will join us, and of course Ed would join me from time to time to keep me up to date on the trials and tribulations of the McCourt divorce and the LA Dodgers and all of that. So we'll get a follow-up, I'm sure, on that as well with Ed.
Let's give a shout-out to all the 4-H exhibitors today on 4-H Day.
That's
yes.
Right, 4-H Day. Way to go,
yay.
4-H'ers. Very important heritage, a part of our heritage here in the state of Minnesota. All right, we've got to run.